Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the City of Cedar Hills Council meeting. Today is Tuesday, the 4th. Tuesday, February the 4th, 2014. I currently have 7:01 p.m. I'd like to call our meeting to order. Tonight's invocation will be given by Councilmember Geddes, and then we'll have our pledge, which will be led by our scout, Spencer Anderson.
Our Heavenly Father, we're indeed grateful this evening to gather together as the City Council and citizens of the city and friends. We're thankful for this great country we live in, for this city, for the blessings of freedom. We ask thee that thou will help us this evening, that as we discuss things, that we'll do so in a positive manner, be able to be constructive with our ideas and decisions. We ask for thy blessings and spirit to be with us in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Spencer. I love it when we have scouts here that can help us win the pledge. It adds something to our meeting, so thank you very much. First item is the approval of the meeting's agenda. And so someone wanted to take a look at our agenda, and if they would like to amend it or adopt it, I will take that now.
I move that we approve the agenda as is.
Seconded.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. All right. Public comments is what we set aside for each council meeting to talk about anything that our residents would care to talk about. And so I did not see that anyone had signed up for public comments. Is anyone that forgot to and wants to? If not, then I will conclude the public comments part of our meeting this evening and move directly to a public hearing. And this is the adoption of impact fees, facilities plan, impact fee, written analysis, and a fee schedule. So has anyone come this evening to specifically talk about our impact fees in relation to the public hearing? No? Okay. Then we can conclude that part of the evening as well. Next part is the appointment of members of the Water Conservation Citizen Advisory Committee. I recognize some of our residents that are here who I've asked to sit on that committee, and I appreciate their willingness to do that and also be here this evening. And so regarding that, the appointment of these members, David, are you going to lead us in that, or how do you want to handle that?
It's just a consent item, so we just need a motion to approve the consent item.
Okay. I have a question. On the agenda item, it says no motion necessary, appointed by the mayor. Does that mean we don't need a motion?
You just approve the consent calendar.
Oh.
That's all you do.
No. When you go to bed. I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion has been seconded. Any further discussion?
Just a big thank you to those residents who are willing to serve on this committee. I think it's a very important one.
I do too. So,
do we have their names?
We do.
Oh, okay.
And so, I'm going to mention their names, and then we'll vote on that. Oh. So, I've asked Richard Noble to serve as chair of this committee with regular members Joel Wright, Brad Daly, Priscilla Lee, Cliff Chandler, and Betty Jo McKinley. So, those are the names. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed?
You actually don't need a motion there. No motion. No motion.
All right. Then that has been approved. Thank you, Brad, and also Betty Jo for showing up. So you're approved, and we're going to put you guys to work right away. This is what I consider a really important committee. We use a lot of water in our city, and to the extent that we're able to, through education and various other means, encourage our residents to use a little less water, actually a lot less water, then I think that will be helpful to our city. So thank you very much for your effort to serve our city. Okay. You're welcome to stay. Or now that's taken care of, you can feel free to leave anytime that you guys would like to. Next item is city reports and business. So I'll start from my left, Mr. Bunker.
Is this Mayor, would you like us to talk about SR 146 at this point?
I would like to talk about SR 146 and then anything else that you would like to.
Okay, should I go to the podium there?
Do you have any box? You can have as many of these as you want.
So we were discussing SR 146 Canyon Road in the work session before we started the regular council meeting. But just to recap a little bit from that discussion, it is being proposed that the city consider taking over jurisdictional control of SR 146 within the city boundary limits of Cedar Hills, so from the mouth of the canyon to approximately the canal. And then Pleasant Grove would also take over jurisdictional control of SR 146 from that point down to State Street in Pleasant Grove. And we've had several meetings with the Department of Transportation and also the City of Pleasant Grove just discussing the improvements along SR 146. UDOT has set aside some money in cooperation with the county to do a 6-inch mill, which means to remove 6 inches of asphalt off of the roadway surface and then repave the road. That would give the roadway a new surface. It would not address any of the geometric design issues that are on the road or any drainage issues. It would simply replace the surface.
Now, David, on those, aren't a lot of the drainage issues related to the homes on the east side of Canyon Road and them draining water down to the lower section, like the east edge of Canyon Road?
No.
Where is the drainage issue specifically?
So if you look at the surface of that roadway, and I actually have that here, I'll tell you how big that is. Okay, so there is approximately 644,000 square feet of pavement on that road. That is a massive area where drainage, you know, in every event, every storm event, that collects a lot of drainage. It has nowhere to go. UDOT has not ever provided any drainage control on the roadway.
Right.
All the development east of Canyon Road has been required to provide 100% retention of all of the drainage in their development. So the Cedars East development, 100% retention. They have used retention ponds or sumps that percolate to take care of all of their retention. Now, one of those large retention ponds is right at the corner of Canyon Road and Bay Hill, mm-hmm. on the what would be the northwest corner of that intersection. There's a really large retention pond right there. And so every development that the city has approved along Canyon Road, the city has actually required that development to come in and address drainage and take care of it on site.
Now, the reason I mention that is because it seems like there's two intersections down towards our boundary with Pleasant Grove, mm-hmm. where we have water that comes down one of the side streets and backs up on the east side of Canyon Road that we get complaints about because it's either standing water for months and months on end, or during the winter it's an ice skating rink. So would drainage issues like that be addressed also?
Yeah, they would be. Now, I think one of the roads you're talking about is 9220 North.
I believe so.
And that is an old subdivision, Mahogany.
Right.
And it was only recently annexed, boundary adjusted into Cedar Hills a few years ago. And so there are definitely drainage deficiencies in the old parts of town. And so we would have to address the drainage that's specific to that site, that development. But anything on the corridor, anything on the Canyon Road corridor would need to be addressed with, because there's no curb and gutter on Canyon Road right there.
Yeah.
And so that drainage just kind of goes wherever it goes to the low point. It's trying to find its way home.
Right, which can compromise the structure of the road, too.
Absolutely.
Over time. because it compresses the dirt underneath it, and then the road falls and cracks. And
yeah. And, you know, I spent some time at UDOT, working for UDOT, and in their roadway design division, and we concentrated on three aspects of roadway design: drainage, drainage, and drainage.
Exactly.
Without taking care of drainage, you will not have a roadway surface that will last you. And, you know, things like crack sealing roadways and taking care of the surface, extremely important to maintain streets. So the funding amount that UDOT, in cooperation with the county, was about $4.4 million. We have been discussing with Mountain Land Association of Governments. The mayor's had several meetings with MAG and the mayors locally on applying for a matching grant that would take that those funds and hopefully match them.
It may not be a matching. It may be less, or it may be more.
Yeah, some kind of a cooperation there. And so what we're working on right now is really tying down the cost estimate for the improvements along Canyon Road, both in Cedar Hills and in Pleasant Grove, because we need to take care of all of these issues before the cities would take them over. It would be extremely difficult, and I would not recommend taking that roadway before it's improved, because it will cost millions of dollars, and we quite simply do not have the funds to plug millions of dollars into that road. So that's one issue that we would work with MAG, UDOT, the county, on getting funds to build that road up to what it should be, including all the drainage issues.
Okay.
So once the roadway is constructed, it has to be maintained. And currently we have about a $200,000-$250,000 annual budget to surface tree our streets within the city and keep our roads up to standard. We've done a cost estimate for what it would take to over a 20-year design life of that road, and we're estimating it's around $70,000 to $75,000 a year to maintain Canyon Road from the mouth of the canyon to our city limit. Now, that would include, obviously striping, signage, surface treatments, crack seals, all the components that go into making a road last. We would need to basically count on doing that for Canyon Road.
Does it include snow removal?
Did you say $75,000 a year?
Yes, $70,000 to $75,000 is our estimate.
And does that include snow removal?
That includes snow removal.
So that's just a little under a quarter of what our current budget is for the rest of our streets?
Yes.
And does that include then providing additional rebuilds or maintenance farther in the future, or is that something we would have to
bond
for?
Right, yeah. And so typically with surface treatments, you want to take a new surface and very quickly put some kind of a surface rejuvenator on to protect the surface, and we estimate it by year three we should do that. But then it would extend that life back out maybe to year nine. We would do another surface treatment year 9, another one about year 12, and another one about year 18, which would kick that 25 years.
And then what happens in 25 years?
And then we would need to do a mill and overlay like UDOT is doing. These surface treatments don't last forever. They extend the life of your roads, but they,
And so that should be at that point in time $2 to $4 or $5 million to.
It would be millions of dollars to mill that. Now we wouldn't have to go as deep as what UDOT is proposing. They're thinking 6 inches deep. If we were to mill and do an overlay, we could do a 3-inch, half that.
Right, but if we take over the road, that still obligates us
25, 30 years
to do that sort of thing as well.
And so
the $75,000 that you're estimating right now does not have like a sinking fund to cover the remill at the end of 25 years either, right?
So we have in year number 18 a mill and overlay, which is in that number.
Oh, okay.
So our 20-year cost we're assuming is about $1.6 million. So we would get additional Class B and C road funds. and over the 20-year period, about $100,000, just over $100,000, which helps, but doesn't go very far. Roads are expensive.
David, does that $75,000 per year maintenance include the additional staff that would be needed?
Yes, we put in a hold on a second, let me look at this. We have, yes, there would be manpower included in that.
And equipment?
And equipment, yes. So we have a capital outlay at the beginning for an additional 10-wheel truck with the appropriate snow plow. We would have to have that year one. We just don't have enough resources right now to allocate our vehicles to Canyon Road and still get to the rest of the city like we need to.
And what would that capital outlay be?
We're, as far as cost,
mm-hmm.
we're estimating $180,000.
So, quick question on that, David.
And we would amortize that over the 20-year life of the roadway.
Have we looked at the possibility of maybe partnering with PG to do that? So instead of us having to have a snowplow to do Canyon Road and them having to have a snowplow and staff, would there be a possibility of working with them and creating an agreement where both cities would kind of upfront that cost, but then either depending on the year or the storm or however we want to work it, one city would be responsible to just maintain the entire section of road. So we would plow from here to State Street, or they would plow from State Street to here, so that each city is not having to upfront that total cost.
Yeah. You know, and we've talked about that briefly. The way we've approached this is trying to be conservative. If it is given to us, if the city has to take it over, what's worst case scenario here? Let's be conservative, right? Because the last thing we want to do is come to you and say, hey, we could do this for $25,000 a year. Not a big deal. And then all of a sudden we get a $50,000, $60,000 a year bill. That would be detrimental to our budget.
Right.
So we're looking at this saying, hey, if it's up to us and we have to provide this, this is what it's going to cost.
So this is worst case, we do everything on our own, like absolute worst scenario.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then in addition to that, even if we do have our own 10-wheel truck, it's a machine, and it will break down. And it may break down at the most inopportune time, December 15th, right before Christmas, and we get a huge snowstorm, and all the places that fix 10-wheel trucks are kind of backlogged and shut down for the holidays. What do we do? That's when we would call Pleasant Grove and say, hey,
guess what?
We need your help. And so I would hate to have just one option and then have something happen where we're stuck without a backup plan. And
well, we always need a plan B. No matter
absolutely.
Whether we buy a new truck or not, there's always yep. got to be a plan B for, like you said, what happens if that truck goes south?
Yeah.
Well, now we have to call PG or Highland or whoever. It is.
Yeah. And those cities are great to work with, and they would help us out in a pinch
right.
like that. We've got
David?
A good relationship there.
Do we have any way of getting vehicle counts on how much that road is used for through traffic to access the canyon as opposed to being used by local residents?
UDOT may have some information. You know, the latest counters that I saw on Canyon Road were probably a year and a half ago. I don't know if they put those counters down, you know, in Pleasant Grove to see how many vehicles were tripping at the front end versus, you know, past our city limit to find out how many were through. We can ask UDOT what their ADT is.
Because if they're talking about giving us a road like this, as magnanimous as that sounds of them, you know, what they're doing is they're putting the bill for all of this traffic that is really highway traffic going to the canyon, on a small town that happens to be at the mouth of the canyon, right?
Right.
And if we can use that kind of data to bolster our case and say, look, most of the traffic on here isn't our residents. It doesn't make sense for us to take it over. That, you know, that seems like that would be something they would listen to, I would hope.
Mm-hmm. So one other comment with that, Daniel. I was actually talking to one of the PG council members, and they kind of thought the same thing, is that there's probably a lot of residents from, like, the Linden-Orem area that either want to come up and go to Highland, Alpine, mouth of the canyon, whether they want to go out to Cabela's or whatever. But on the same side of that, we also probably have a lot of Highland, Alpine, even some part of Lehigh that still access that road to go down into North Orem and Provo. So, I don't know, if we looked at the numbers, I bet we would probably find that most of the use of that road is actually not even Cedar Hills. I mean, that's just my gut feeling, but I don't think our residents are using it as much as other residents around us.
And it's changing. It's very dynamic. And one of the biggest things that has helped change the traffic patterns, and people are slow to change their habits, but with 4800 West and getting that road completed, and that road goes all the way to the freeway, some of the traffic potentially has been shifted over. And that's one of the reasons why UDOT would like to divest itself of 146, is because now they've picked up this additional roadway, and it's under their jurisdiction. And so now they're putting resources to a five-lane road on 4800 West all the way to the freeway. So they have two parallel state routes that are so close to each other. In you know, from UDOT's perspective, they're saying this just doesn't make sense.
I thought they had made an agreement with the county that if they built North County Road, North County Boulevard, that they would then give the county Canyon Road.
They did, yeah.
And why has the county reneged on that agreement?
Well, it's difficult for the county. You know, the county assessed the roadway 146, and they really don't have the resources to plug in to maintain the road. And because most of the county roads are not, they're not like 146, and they're not like 4800 West. Most of the county roads are just that, county roads. They're 28 feet wide. They do chip seals every so often, and they're just maintained as county roads, not as a...
But they got a road for free in North County Boulevard.
I don't know that it was... I think it wasn't so much for free. They did put their own funds into it. The county did. So
okay.
There was a lot of work by the county going into that road as well.
David?
But the other issue is all the county maintenance sheds, they're in South Provo. That's the closest one to us. So if we have a snowstorm and they start mobilizing from South Provo, I mean, we're going to be 3-4 hours by the time we get roadway
cleared.
That's
easy to fix. All they have to do is give us a budget of $20,000 a year and we'll plow it for them, right? That's just a money transfer.
Right.
It's really the building of the road and the maintaining of the road, which they can do regardless of where their trucks are located.
But even though that you say that, Daniel, when I left this morning at 6:30 to go to work, it was really funny to see that all the side roads were plowed going down through Cedar Hills and PG.
Oh, same with me.
All of them were pretty much just wet. There was no snow on any of them, but you get on Canyon Road and it was an ice skating rink this morning.
Well, there was a car that was up on the rocks.
Oh, I'm sure.
It slid and gone up on the rocks halfway down Canyon Road.
Right.
David?
And it's because nobody plows it and nobody cares about it.
Well, UDOT's having, I mean, their resources are really stretched thin right now, and they openly admit, hey, we're getting more and more miles of UDOT road to maintain, and we have the same workforce. They have the same amount of trucks, the same employees, and they're trying to juggle multiple
roads. You know what?
Roads.
When you grow, you have to get more income to handle the larger infrastructure requirements. That's part of a growing county and a growing state. You can't just keep your resources fixed when things grow, and they'll have to learn that.
Hey, David?
Are we being railroaded into this decision, or, I mean, do we not have to take it? I mean, I certainly am open to listening to all the pros and cons, but I don't think as a city we need to be forced into taking the maintenance over of a road that, unless we can pay for it and it makes sense for us.
Yeah.
I mean, in a lot of ways it does make sense because a lot of our residents do use it and let's keep them happy and safe. So, I mean, there's some good reasons, but they can't just say it's yours now without our decisions or...
No.
I have spoken with some officials who feel that at some point UDOT will just say, hey, we just aren't going to maintain that road and we need the cities to take it over and here you go. Now, as we've talked to UDOT, typically that's not what they do. There's another road up in Salt Lake where it was a state route, really, really small, went under the railroad tracks, one lane wide. So, yeah, I mean, every other car had to stop and clear the underpass. The city didn't want it. You know, it's a multi-million dollar deal to redo the underpass. The city wouldn't take it. The state kept it. And it's not maintained it's just not a priority. It's not a high traffic road. UDOT's into moving traffic. It's what they do. They like the five lane roads like 4800 West where they know they can take a large population and move that traffic to the freeway. And that's what UDOT's about. So as the roads become less and less used and less average daily traffic, they like to divest themselves of those kinds of roads and give them back to the city.
Let me add just a little bit of color to that in terms of neither UDOT nor the county can force us to ever take the road. I think what David's referring to is that they have both said quite clearly that they have no intention of ever making this road a priority. Therefore, if it does become a priority to Cedar Hills and Pleasant Grove, that's where the pressure comes that would be self-inflicted, because we want a road that is good and usable and safe, and they're not willing to do that. So at that point, where David says eventually you're forced to take the road, it's because you feel like you need to fix this road for your residents, and neither the county nor UDOT is willing to do that. Therefore, you have to do it. So I think where we are with this road is that we're between a rock and a hard place, because I don't believe they are going to do anything. I exchanged a bunch of emails with Andrew Jackson of MAG this afternoon, and he seems confident that we'll be able to cobble the money together in order to fix the road. The real problem is, where do you come up with the money to maintain it? And so they seem to think that there won't be much maintenance for the first 5 or 6 years, because it's a new road, other than, you know, David mentioned in year 3 that you give it a treatment. But at some point, then that maintenance will come home to roost. And if you're not prepared for it, then you're forced to raise property taxes, which nobody wants to do.
So what do you think, just hypothetically speaking, because if we keep pushing this issue out another, let's say, probably 2 to 3 years, that road's going to be undriveable. I mean, it's getting to the condition where right now, I mean, it's hazardous on some instances. But if we wait another 2-3 years and the county keeps pushing back and UDOT keeps pushing back and nobody does anything, where are we at in 3 years? Are they finally just going to say, well, we're not going to do anything to it, and if you guys want to do something, great? Are they going to let it get to that point? Or are finally, if we keep pushing back on them, are they going to be forced to do something?
That's a good question, and I don't know the answer. I mean, well, they both have said quite clearly that it is never going to be a priority.
Well, I know it's not a priority, but if we keep pushing back and it's becoming a hazard and people can't drive on it because of the potholes and everything else that's starting to happen, what are they going to do? Because in another couple of years...
I agree. It could. And so I think...
David, well, the other thing to consider is UDOT has a $1 billion budget.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If we're talking about that we're going to cobble together the money and find a way to actually redo the road properly, $75,000 a year in maintenance for them is nothing out of a $1 billion budget. They can surely find room in their budget for maintaining a road that has been redone.
You would think.
So I think the problem... Oh, is as a state entity.
I mean, the percentage is microscopic.
I think the problem as a state entity is that they are pulled from every city and county in the state wanting the exact same thing that we're asking for. And so because we are a small city and it's a small road compared to Salt Lake and St. George and all of these other roads, they see us as a small priority. The only, at least my understanding, is the only way to force UDOT take care of this road is if the state legislature forces them to earmark funds for that. Otherwise, they're not under any obligation to do anything.
I can put together a really smashing website and a public campaign with a petition to...
Which may be an option.
Let me know, I'll help you with
which
it.
Which may be an option for us,
yeah,
is to lobby the state legislature for it. But I don't think that lobbying UDOT's going to do anything. It's going to be the state who forces them to spend money on that project, because they're pulled in so many different directions, and they're going to always answer to the bigger people. And we're not. We're such a small city.
Daniel, you're hired as our lobbyist. I didn't hear you, sorry.
You're hired as our lobbyist.
Real and quick, I will get you all the pictures you need of that road to put on your website.
Yeah. So I do think that there are productive conversations taking place. I just don't know where they're going to end up. So legislator from Pleasant Grove, according to Andrew Jackson, was open to the idea of allocating more funds to SR 146. But that's just one legislator, and we don't know where that's going to go. So it's best to, you know, be realistic about these things and we're pushing the ball forward. I think we are putting pressure on them, and they're pushing back as well. So we will keep discussing.
Sure. 0.0075% of their annual budget.
Exactly.
Back to Councilmember Augusta's question, we can't go several years without doing anything. Well, that's where the $4.4 million is coming from, is they're prepared to do something. If the cities were to say, hey, we have no desire whatsoever to take over Canyon Road, if Pleasant Grove and Cedar Hills did decide that, UDOT would proceed with their plan to spend the $4.4 million doing the 6-inch mill and overlay. And they would redo the surface of the street within the next year. And so then that would give us a new surface. It wouldn't address, like,
not any drainage
other issues.
No. And now we're going to be another $2 million.
But we wouldn't have
drainage.
Potholes and you know, things like that that we have now. That road is falling apart.
So. Okay.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, but from the mouth of the canyon to about the fire station, we've improved, or the developers, Cedars and everybody else, have developed it to the current ultimate standard of that road. Is that correct?
That's correct. Except for there's a small segment on the east side from the mouth of the canyon up to that.
From that pump station down to Mountaintop Estates or whatever it is.
So there is a small section of curb and gutter not done there.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So. And that's all I had on that issue. One other issue, tomorrow Governor Herbert has asked that we fly our flags half staff so that in honor of Sergeant Corey Wright that was killed.
Absolutely.
Thanks. All right. Mr. DePaul, time is yours.
I will try and calm down now. So I think the only thing I have to report is that I had some students approach me at the start of the semester about building code for our city because they'd seen what we'd done in the past. I wasn't planning on taking that on again this year, but I told them I'd be happy to talk them through it. We went through a lot of different options, and what they chose is they wanted to work on an issue tracker for the city. Now, the way this works is that they have 90 students in the class, and they all throw their ideas onto a big wiki page. There were about 40 or 50 ideas this year, and the top 10 ideas based on student votes are the ones that get built. And so ours was one of the ones that was chosen to get built. They are wanting to build a mobile app and a website where residents can take a picture of their phone of a problem that they see, whether that's a broken sidewalk, a street sign that's fallen down, bad water pressure, whatever it is, and just click send. That would tag it with GPS coordinates and get it to the city staff so they know where that issue is occurring. And then staff would be able to update the site when the issue is handled, and residents would get a little notification on their phone, hey, your problem's been taken care of. There is lots of work on other cities that have done stuff like this, but they are all predominantly large cities that have sunk money into, you know, fairly complex solutions that work for them. Our team is looking at building something small that's really cost-effective and simple for a smaller city. And so they have a team of 8 students working on it. They're going to town on it. They've met with David to get some input on what the city's needs are, and we'll see what they come up with.
Hey, can I ask you a quick question on that? Have you guys looked to see if other cities are doing something similar to that?
No small cities are doing this.
Bigger ones are?
Big ones like Boston, San Francisco, Chicago, they all have systems like this. And you go to a web page and it shows all of their outstanding issues and then feedback of when the staff closed that issue and handled it.
Is there any posted or like public feedback on how the systems are working, what their challenges are, if it's getting used, if it's getting abused, anything like that?
That's a good question. I'll reach out to my contact in Boston. I've talked to the guy in Boston who runs their system, and he indicated they're really happy with it, but I'll get some feedback from
them. I'd just be curious to see, like, if they could have like their top 3 items that they could have changed or maybe done differently.
Oh, yeah.
Just to see if there's anything that we could maybe improve upon or do differently.
I also have a contact with a guy who runs a company who does this for a living.
Oh, cool.
And so I'm going to check with him to see what the options are in terms of a city just purchasing the stuff that they have and see if it would be cost effective for a smaller city. They're really focused on big markets right now. We're not really on their radar.
But maybe we could tailor their system down to meet our needs or something.
Yeah.
Cool.
Mr. Geddes.
Okay, I will just briefly report on the January 23rd Planning Commission meeting that was held here. Most of the City Council, I believe, was in attendance. It was well attended by the residents. The developer came back with a modified plan from the previous version. I thought there was a lot of good input, good discussion, and the Planning Commission voted unanimously to approve the concept. So I believe it will be
recommended approval.
Recommended approval. So it's going to the next Planning Commission for more details, and then we'll see it eventually.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Can I ask a quick question on that?
What's that?
I was under the impression that it would go to the City Council for the conceptual approval on a City Council level. Does that not happen, or does it? It does.
Yep.
And then it goes back to the Planning Commission for the details, or?
So the Planning Commission makes a recommendation to the City Council.
Trent, can you speak in your
mind? So the Planning Commission will actually make a recommendation to the City Council. The Planning Commission doesn't make any approval or grant anything. They have to make a recommendation to the Council.
Okay.
So it'll come to the City Council from the recommendation based on the Planning Commission.
For conceptual approval.
Okay. And then we take and either approve or disapprove with our corrections, notes, changes, whatever. We send it back to the Planning Commission, then they look at it again, and then they will make a final recommendation, and it may go back and forth a couple of times in between that. But yes, it comes to us for conceptual approval.
And I think the reason why we're not discussing now, there's a public hearing notice, a notice time, at least 30 days, I think. So I think we'll probably see it next City Council meeting. Is that correct?
And how tall was the building that they proposed?
They proposed, it shrunk a story. It's now four stories with the wings now at three stories.
Entire wing?
No, just for the one apartment complex.
Just the small
20 feet, and then it will step down.
Okay.
It's still 300 units.
Still 300 units.
Yeah. That's an important piece.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Mrs. Reese.
Let's see. I'm going to be meeting with Sam shortly we're going to be issuing a press release. He is having a meet and greet in the Vista Room for brides and for companies that may be interested in the Vista Room, such as catering companies, florists, cake designers, that sort of thing. So we will have a press release on that. And then he's also putting together a video of what the Vista Room can look like and what we can do here, so that will be, he'll be working on that as well. YCC is planning for the dance this Friday, February 7th. It is for kids ages 12 to 15. There you'll have a dance and games and a bake-off. So kids can bring a baked item for judging at that night. And then they're starting to discuss ideas for the Easter egg hunt and summer activities. The Family Festival Committee is meeting later this month. But the individual over sponsorships, I'm trying to remember his name, Steve?
From where?
The Family Festival Committee. I thought you made the recommendation for sponsorships.
Steve Weber.
He's doing a fantastic job. He is already reaching out to organizations and has already received some commitments on sponsorships, and his goal is to exceed our sponsorship revenue by about $7,000 this year from what we've ever done in the past. So that would be fantastic if he can do that. We continue to get more likes on our social media. It's much slower growth than it was last year, but we can keep working on that. And then I'm hoping, it looks like Daniel's presenting at the town hall meeting, and you might want to cover that, but you're presenting at the town hall meeting on the 13th. It's the emergency preparedness town hall meeting, and you're going to be looking for email addresses and phone numbers. And so I'm hoping that at that town hall meeting we will be successful in getting that information, so that way we can be more proactive with our messaging.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Mr. Augustus.
So we did have a meeting with North Point Solid Waste. Had a pretty good discussion with them. They're getting very antsy for us to sign our interlocal agreement, or whatever they're calling it now. They said that four cities have signed off on it. Four have not, and four probably will not. Being
the four that will not.
Eagle Mountain, Cedar Fort, Alpine. I forget what the fourth one is. They're the ones that aren't participating in the board as it is anyway.
Okay.
And so we don't anticipate that they will come back and want to sign the agreement. But they may, just because they may not want to be kicked off the board, they may still want to have representation. However, their representatives aren't attending our meetings anyway. And so we're going to send a letter to them and reach out to them to find out if they still want to be a part of North Point. And if they don't, then we're going to take action to actually eliminate them from our bylaws and actually exclude them and go through the process to get them formally out. So, as far as our interlocal agreement with them, they actually sent me an updated email, I believe, day before yesterday, and I'll be sending it over to our city manager so that he can review it also, and then we will have to see if we want to bring that to our council to review, along with the information that our staff is working on to get us some more information as far as what our costs would be if we direct called out to the landfill out west.
Can you send me a copy of that too?
Yeah, I'll send it to you also. The email that I've got is actually the contract from Alpine and what they're paying with the landfill, and we actually grammar requested it as a board so that we have their information so that we can see what they're paying.
Great.
So it's good information for us to have too.
Okay.
Quick question on that, and it's probably for David. Have we received any updates? You were going to get some bids from Waste Management and the other organization. Have we received anything from them?
No, we have not. So we're still waiting for Waste Management and IRL.
That's been about a month. That's quite a while. Yeah. Mr. Crawley.
Yeah, none of my committees met in between the last meeting, but I just wanted to get closure on something I brought up last time, and that was that I was going to meet with the golf manager and the city manager about possibly sending out gift certificates. And so I met with them, and it went well, and I feel like that they're, what came of it is that the golf course already gives out gift certificates, not gift certificates, but free golf to residents, but a lot of residents are unaware of that, so the gift certificate will help people become aware of that, and they already had plans in place to get that going, and they just made them a little more concrete, so I expect to see gift certificates out informing residents of these free golf opportunities probably in March. So I think that's kind of the end of my involvement. It seems like they have things pretty well under control with that, and I think it'll help our residents participate more in the golf course, which I think would be very good.
So are you going to work with staff to come up with a policy recommendation for council?
I believe they already had it in their budget, and it was something that was already being planned by them, so they felt that it was already something that has been approved.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. Very good. Let's move on to our scheduled items. Item number 8 is a review action item on adopting an impact fee facilities plan. So let's see who's presenting. Mr. Bunker, you are.
Mayor and Council, the city has been working on an impact fees facilities plan update and an associated impact fee amendment. And we have been working with Science Bank Public Finance and Bowen and Collins, and they have been reviewing the IFFP for the public safety, culinary water, sanitary sewer, parks, and transportation systems. And you should have in front of you those workups. The last time that we completed an impact fee facility plan update was in 2007, and so it's good timing for us to get this done. And I will turn the time over to Kirby from Zions Bank Public Finance to give you an update on that and to explain what's in front of you.
Hello, Mayor, Council. Good to see you all again. Y'all have in front of you the impact fee facility plans and the impact fee analysis. Those documents, which are quite substantial if you wanted to tack them in one sitting, will explain the changes and will explain what the new fees are. Now, I have a presentation prepared, but I'm also, David also made me aware that you may be tabling the decision. I just want to say, before you get that underway, and then you can decide if you want me to give this presentation, it doesn't have to be the same length as last time, I can shrink it back down. But let me just say that in this process, David, we have recommended with the city staff to approach the development community. We send invitations out, personal invitations out to representatives of the development community. There was not a major showing at the meeting. That doesn't mean that they don't know about it. They knew about the meeting. Their decision to not attend doesn't mean that they didn't care. It just means that they felt good about this process and they didn't see a need to come. You should feel good knowing, though, that that invitation was sent and they're happy that you're involving them in this process, that it's an open process. In addition, we had a work session last time where you were able to be better educated on that. So I would just stress that if you're considering tabling discussion, know that we've reached out to the development community. The public hearing was in that was an announcement made, so they're well aware of today, and they were also well aware of the meeting that we had to invite them to the development meeting. So I'll let you all decide if you want to do that. If you do, I have a presentation we can give, and then we can talk about what you would do in adopting that fee.
Let me ask a question.
Yeah.
Is there any material changes to tonight's presentation that's different from when you presented last time?
The only consideration is that we finished before that work session. We didn't have a roads impact fee finished. We do have that finished now, and it is dropping by a double-digit percentage.
I think it is our intent to postpone this issue because I think we would rather have a sit-down meeting with the Home Builders Association and get their blessing on this before we approve it. And so how long do you think it would take to present this new information?
Well, what you have in front of you has the road impact fee analysis in there, so you'll have the updated. You'll have all, now it's complete. And so if you go through there, you can see it. And there should be a summary page that shows the final fees as well.
Would it make sense, Kirby, to guide the council to that section of the transportation fee?
Mm-hmm.
Then they could see that section that has changed and just go through that, just that individual portion.
All right. So that's the portion I think that would be helpful, is any changes that are different from last time. And I just wanted to get a feel for, do you need 5 minutes, do you need 10 minutes?
Well, the presentation is mainly the same. I didn't put in details of the road impact fee analysis, but I can tell you that the data for the city was not extensive. And so the reason we were kind of waiting was to see how much city staff could give us in terms of detailed information, because the state statute has made some changes, and if you're going to include the cost of existing infrastructure, you need to have good information on how much it costs, when you purchased it, who contributed to that plan. We didn't have that level of detail, so we decided what we would do is include what we could include. And because of that law change, and that's the significant reason why the fees are dropping, and it's going down by, I believe, about 30%. I could pull those out, but those numbers are in the presentation you have. So that's the big thing to know, is because of the law changes, we had to be more specific on what we could include. We didn't have that exact information, so we had to leave out some of the existing infrastructure, in addition to the 10-year timing changing the, our projects have changed compared to what we planned in 2007, what you planned today. So that's the big change. Yes, question?
Can you direct us to the new summary page that had a, remember the last slide when in our work session?
Yeah, let me pass out a summary page that has the impact fees.
So we don't have it.
So while he's doing that, I wasn't aware that we were going to postpone voting on this. What is the reasoning behind it?
What's that?
Why are we postponing this?
So that we can have, I believe Mr. Augustus and Mr. Bunker are going to try and sit down with the Utah Valley Home Builder Association and see if they have any objections to this before we actually push it.
Was this a recommendation by council? By council?
Can I actually address that? Can I make a comment?
Yes.
I have actually been in contact with the executive board and executive directors for the Home Builders Association, and they have said that if we can bring us the updated impact fee analysis before we approve it, that they would also like to review it and kind of give us their stamp of approval or blessing on it, so that in the future, we hopefully won't have any problems with them coming back and saying, oh, well, you guys did this, and we could have helped you have done this and kind of tweaked it a little bit. So they would like like to just review everything, and if they have any further recommendations, they would bring those to us so that we could maybe incorporate that also along with what Zions Bank has done, just to make sure that we get their buy-off also.
Which I understand, but I will publicly then express extreme frustration with them that they knew we were having these meetings. They were personally invited to these meetings. They chose not to come to these meetings and are now asking us to postpone it so they can give feedback after the fact.
No. Hold on. They didn't ask us to postpone it. This is something that I'm asking the council for, is so that I can take it to them. This was more of a recent conversation. Part of the problem that we always face in city government or neighborhood organizations or anything, we fight complacency a lot of the time. And a lot of times when we have meetings like this, if people look at something just at kind of a high level and fairly much agree with it, they tend not to get involved. And I think when we had our public hearing on it and invited developers and stuff out to actually review this information, people that are happy with things tend to not get involved with things. And I found this on our homeowners association, city council, wherever it is. And so just because people didn't show up doesn't mean that they're not happy with it. It probably means that they're just kind of happy and the status quo is good enough for them. So the reason we want to postpone it is so that we can take it to them, even though they didn't show up, and I'm going to talk to them about that also. But it's not something that they're asking us to do.
But if they decide that they want us to make changes, is that going to affect what we've already done and paid?
Well, if there were significant changes to the study, yes, it would, if we had to go back and redo things. But I can tell you the level of detail and the way that we did these fees, we were very conservative. We didn't do anything controversial. One, I would be surprised if they had somebody really sit down and go through this on the level that we've gone through with city staff to really understand this. If they did take it to that level, I wouldn't see any recommendations. If they had something they wanted to do and it significantly changed, mm-hmm. something, the methodology, then yeah, it would cost more for us to go back and redo things. I wouldn't anticipate that happening, though.
But in talking to them, I don't anticipate that they're going to have some earth-shattering, because they know Bowen and Collins and they know Zions Bank. I don't think they're going to have any issues or any major recommendations, or frankly probably any recommendation on it, but they just want to see it so that they can say, yeah, we agree with what they've done, you have our backing also. And it just gives us one more leg up in the future if somebody comes back and says, hey, I want to sue Cedar Hills and I'm going to use the homeowners association. Well, we can go back and say, well, guess what, you guys signed off on this, so why are you challenging us on it now?
Do you think?
I think it's wise,
Trent, that we can get them to give us something in writing.
Yeah,
do they support it? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are we going to wait till the next council meeting, or what? What's your
I'm
thought?
Hoping to get it to them as soon as we can, because I'd like to get this back on our table just as quickly as we can.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think it's important to include them in the process, even though
they were included.
Here.
They chose not to come.
Right, but even though they didn't come, I think it's good for us to reach out, because mm-hmm. it's good to develop that relationship with them. It'll serve us well in the long run.
And Rob, I agree. And so just to add the final point, that your city staff was well aware of that, mm-hmm. and that's why the invitation specifically to the Utah Home Builders Association was made.
Yeah.
And the fact that they didn't attend, I just want to stress again, you know, y'all might have been a little worried, like, well, nobody came to that. They knew it was happening. That alone is a huge thing to know that, look, we're involving, Cedar Hills is involving the community in this process. So that in itself is a big check and stamp.
And that's what I'm trying to say, is that unlike another public hearing where we just make an agenda notice and anybody, they have to come and find our public agenda or read in the paper, whatever the case is. We went out of our way this time to personally invite the Utah Valley Home Builders Association.
But it wasn't just Utah Valley Home Builders. I mean, we sent it out to developers, contractors,
right.
Anybody that had an interest in it got it also.
Exactly.
And nobody showed up.
Property rights ombudsman was here. He got the invitation and he did come and reviewed the process and gave his unofficial stamp of approval as well. So just be aware of that, and if you want to take it further and go, that's fine. One thing I will just say, because I've had a little more conversation with those involved, your fees are dropping, so I'm sure they're not going to have any problem. They'll probably look at, you know, they'll probably see that all the fees are going down. By the way, it's page 12.
That'll show. So it's 52%?
Page 12.
39,
going
35
down
to 39%.
52%.
That's actually my area of concern for them. And so
right.
I noticed that other cities, when they have lowered their impact fees, then the home builders turn around and sue them.
Well, when you say other cities, we're just talking about one.
Well,
and that's American Fork.
Yeah.
In American Fork, the problem there was that, and this is a claim, I'm not sure it's substantiated, but the claim is that they were continually asking the city and trying to get the city to redo their study. Now, the city decided, for the simplicity of it, and maybe some of those allegations were true, they decided to settle.
I've heard that side, and then I've heard American Fork side. Neither makes me particularly comfortable, and so for that reason, then I think it makes sense to... I was hoping that the meeting with the home builders would have taken place already, but it wasn't, so that's why I think it makes sense to table it and have a sit-down meeting with them. And if we can get their blessing on this, then there's less chance of litigation in the future, and that's really what I want to avoid.
And that's what I want to get their buy-in for, is specifically what you said,
right?
Because if we get their backing, it makes it a lot harder for somebody to come challenge us in the future.
Yeah, so, you know, I appreciate you being here, Kirby, particularly contributing to my daily sugar content. You keep bringing us chocolate. I appreciate that. I'm not sure my doctor does, but... Thank you.
Hey, can I ask one other quick question, Mayor? Can you really quickly go over that road amount for us and what you guys came up with on the roads and specifically why, just so that when we're having our discussions, I have as much information as possible?
Yes, that's page 12. Everybody turns to page 12. You can see the summary of the fees. That's mine. I would turn it off, but I can't. So on page 12, you can see you're split into two areas, the culinary water upper zone and the lower zone, but the roads fee is the same for both of those. Previously, it was a fee of $1,300, just over $1,300, and that dropped to $625. So that's a decrease of just over 50%. So there's a couple reasons why that's going down in general. Now read the study and you'll have a good idea. It's not a particularly long one. A couple reasons. One is because the statute changed in a way that required you to be more specific. In other words, you couldn't take you couldn't calculate the value of your roads by saying, well, this is how much roads we have and this is how much roads cost. This is today's value of it, so we can get a good idea of the value. Well, the state statute was limited, particularly by lobbying by developers, to say, no, you shouldn't be able to do that. You should only use the historic value of whatever it is. In order to do that, though, you have to have very specific records that show how much you paid for something, when you paid for it, document it. The city doesn't have those records. And so we had to exclude a fair amount of your infrastructure just for legal reasons. Now, that's not specific in the statute, but because, again, we took a conservative approach based on the direction from the city staff, we excluded those. That led to a smaller fee. If you wanted to wait on that, and this was a discussion we had with city staff, if you wanted to wait on the roads and see if you could dig up more of those details, then you might get a bigger fee. Well, it was the decision of the city staff that, no, let's go ahead and bring that to the city council, see what they want to do with that. That's the main reason. Second reason is because, again, with the change in the state statute, you can only include projects in the next 10 years instead of out 20, 30, 40 years. So that limits the amount of new infrastructure that can be included as part of the cost.
Right.
Those are the two big reasons
why the fee
went down. I'm happy if you want to wait. That's probably good to get, you know, specific buy-in with some names. If you can get something in writing, I would be surprised. But if you can, that's great. And I don't think it would solve the issue that some people are feeling, that maybe because they're going down, you have a problem. But I would just stress again that it's always a prerogative of somebody. If they don't feel that the studies that have been done are correct, they can either do their own or they can ask the city to do them. And I'm not aware of either of those cases being done for the city of Cedar Hills. So I think you're in good shape. Even if these fees drop, you're not in the same situation American Fork was.
Okay. Thank you very much.
So, Mayor, I'd like to make a motion, if that's all right. I would like to motion that this item be tabled and allow myself and our city manager, David Bunker, to take this information, present it to the Home Builders Association, and then come back with any possible recommendations or anything from the Home Builders Association, and then review this item at a later time.
I second that motion.
Does it make sense to have somebody from Zions or Bowen and Collins there as well in case there are questions regarding the study that was already done? If Utah Valley, I think that would probably be a good idea.
Well, I think what we need to do is present this information to them. They're not going to be able to review it right there at that meeting. They're going to send it off to their legal team and their executive directors. They will probably put together a recommendation, and then I think there may be a second meeting which would be more beneficial to bring Zions into.
Why don't you send the information to them first before you have the meeting? That way, they will have had a chance to look at it, and then it may make sense to take other people along if you feel like.
If they're going to ask for changes, it might make sense for the people who did the study to indicate why certain recommendations were made.
Right, and what I'm saying is to drop off the information to them. I don't know that it's going to make sense to take everybody initially, but I think we do need to have a meeting with them at some point when they make their recommendations. And at that point, yeah, I think it would make sense to bring Zions Bank or whoever else.
Okay, so you'll drop advice soon, and then you'll schedule a meeting shortly thereafter.
Correct.
And it's that meeting shortly thereafter that it may make sense to bring Kirby from Zions and someone from Bowen Collins.
Yeah.
So do we think we can get this on the agenda for the next meeting?
It's totally up to their schedule. I don't know if they are going to schedule a specific meeting for this, if they're going to send it out and let each of them review it individually. I'll just have to talk to them and find out, but I will make it expeditiously as possible.
Okay. Thank you. So I've got a motion that's been seconded. Any further discussion? Okay. Mr. Cipolla.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Augustus.
Aye.
Mr. Crowley.
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you. It's been tabled. Let's move on to item number 9, review action item on a resolution authorizing the mayor to sign an interlocal cooperative agreement. Mr. Mogg, I believe you're presenting on this.
Yes, Mayor, Council. Cedar Hills has been a member of the Utah County Stormwater Coalition in the past, and the time frame for the interlocal agreement is expired. It's a 5-year agreement. It has been in the past agreements. So we're addressing that. The majority of the language of the agreement remains the same. However, there are three areas that I would like to point out that the language has been changed. And one is on page 2, section 1, in which it changes this time period for the agreement from 5 years to 50 years. The second one would be section 4B on page 4. This authorizes the agency's representatives to review, approve, and modify Exhibit A on an annual basis. Exhibit A is a document that calculates what each of the cities contribute to the coalition on an annual basis. And the other one is Section 5, same page, in which language has been added that allows any of the members of the coalition to withdraw from the coalition with a 60-day written notice. And those were the significant changes of the document. Staff recommends that you approve this. The coalition is a great help to our city.
And does it look like Eagle Mountain's joining? This is
Eagle Mountain has requested that they be allowed to join the coalition, yes.
Okay.
So, a quick question. So basically, this the public education and outreach, these are all requirements from DEQ now for stormwater.
Yes. The significant part of this coalition is that the language that we have to provide education to certain groups could be quite extensive and costly to individual jurisdictions. This morning we had a training for the contractors as part of the coalition, and this fulfills the requirements that the city has, but does it at a lesser cost. I know Salt Lake County, they've had to begin advertising. You see television ads, radio ads concerning stormwater issues, and it's been approach the Utah County also will have to do this. And for our city to finance such a program would be extensive, but if we do it as a coalition, then we can associate with other coalitions such as Salt Lake and divide that cost up.
Okay. Any other questions from the council on this? Not, I'll entertain a motion.
I can do that. Sorry, I'm just typing at the same time. All right. I move that we approve resolution 2-4-2014A, an interlocal cooperation agreement with the Utah County Stormwater Coalition for participation in the NPDES Phase 2 Stormwater Public Education and Outreach Best Management Practice Compliance.
Got a motion. Is there a second?
I second.
Got a motion that's been seconded. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Augustus.
Aye.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you very much.
I do have to say I find it entertaining that the acronym for the Stormwater Management Program is SWAMP.
Appropriate.
I guess so.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Lowe, you are going to be presenting next on budget amendments.
Okay. We have just a couple. The first one we visited a few times, and we discussed this in our retreat, and this is basically just rehashing that, where we have a driving range fence with a net that needs to be repaired, and we also have some posts that look like they need to be replaced. And we were able to work with two vendors, and the vendor that's doing the post replacement has given us an estimate of $10,000, and they're willing to let us pay $2,500 in cash and $7,500 in corporate passes, or as I have on this paper, season passes. And so we'd only pay $2,500 in cash for the new posts. And then the rest has to do with replacing the net for the whole driving range fence. And this is just an increase on what was approved earlier at $17,800. Are there any questions on this?
Can you say again, what was that previous amount that we approved?
$17,800. Okay.
So we're actually less. We're adding
$12,200.
Cash wise, we're less though.
No, actually.
Initially that was just to do the net without any post replacements. After we analyzed the posts and realized we had to replace some posts, plus we're extending the length on these posts, and it should help a little with the neighbors across the street.
So how many posts are we replacing?
Five.
And they'll be how tall?
An additional 22 feet above.
So 52 feet. They'll be 52 feet. Which, how tall are they now?
They're 30.
It's more of a long-term solution than just a Band-Aid. And so it seems to make sense to spend only $12,000 more to make a long-term solution.
But then the fencing is all fencing. It's not just for those portions. Okay.
Yep.
It's a brand new net, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Any more questions on the driving range fence? Okay. On the second item, there was a misunderstanding at the very end of last June when we were passing our final budget. The Lone Peak Public Safety budget comes in at the very end, and I had a number from David that included the admin fee, and the way Scott Jackman remembered they were both correct, but one was the total cost, admin plus fire and EMS, and one was just fire and EMS. And so we adjusted it because Scott was adamant that it was the 626. And so There was just some confusion there. After further discussion, David, with the Lone Peak Public Safety, we needed to add the $11,000. And so, since our insurance costs that we anticipated were lower than when we were switching vendors in July, we didn't know exactly how much our insurance was going to be with Olympus, and ended up being a lot less. So I recommend that we adjust that budget down for insurance to offset the cost. Are there any questions on this? Okay. That's all I have as far as budget amendments. So.
Okay. This is a review action item on the budget amendments. So. If you don't have questions, I will entertain.
I do have a question.
Do you have a question?
I do have one question.
Go ahead.
So what's the bottom line total cost for the driving rain fence? Is it $19,700?
Cash, $30,000.
Okay.
Non-cash, $7,500. That's the season passes.
So that's where I see when you were showing us the spreadsheet of the fund balances, that's the $30,000 for the fences sitting there. Okay.
Yeah. Any other questions? Okay. I will entertain a motion then.
I'll make a motion for it.
Go ahead.
I will motion to adopt resolution number 24-2014B. Is that what we're on?
Yep.
It is.
Resolution adopting and amending the 2013-2014 fiscal year budget for the City of Cedar Hills, Utah.
Got a motion?
Second.
A motion that's been seconded. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Mr. Crowley?
Aye.
Mr. Gustis?
Aye.
Mrs. Reese?
Aye.
Mr. Geddes?
Aye.
Mr. Zappala?
Aye.
Thank you very much. Last item is a discussion item. For our capital projects fund, motor pool fund, and vehicle replacement fund. So, Charles, are you presenting on this as well?
Yes. Yes, but I anticipate maybe some comments from David or other people that, or Jeff.
You're welcome to bring up friends if you want. If you
okay.
want to contribute,
because they are the ones that know the vehicles better than me. So, for this next budget year, we're proposing replacing four vehicles and one ATV, four trucks. And let me explain a little bit our philosophy on, at least what I've viewed from watching Public Works and David when they're replacing vehicles, and how they determine, you know, why do we get usually Fords or why did we get a Toyota or whatever. And the process that we go through is they actually look at several models and they go to the state and they get bids on several models with that function for the task that they're asked to do. So we don't ask like a passenger car to plow streets. We get the right kind of vehicle to plow streets. So they go through the process, and Jeff is very non-biased, even though I don't even think he likes Fords. They seem to traditionally they seem to lowball most other brands, and so
is this a slight against a Ford?
I know you drive a Ford truck.
I drive a Ford truck.
And my Ford will
drive. I'm sorry, my uncle was a Chevrolet mechanic, so I can't.
And Charles, my Ford will drive over you.
I know. That's fine. You can love
the
Ford.
These people can't vote.
Everyone has their favorite type of vehicle, and Jeff's really good at not thinking about being just non-biased.
I don't care.
And saying.
Because you drive
okay.
A Chevy.
No, I don't.
You know, even if this other car might have a little bit resale value, if I can get a Ford F-150 with four-door for $21,000 and I can sell it for almost that in 3 years, then that makes a lot more sense. So so that's what happens when we do the analysis on these, whether it's, you know, when we got the Camry, I know we had looked at Chevrolet, Ford, whatever, and it actually came in at the best price. And so, and they have great resale value too. And so, we're not just picking our favorites. There's no bias here, at least not that I've witnessed. There's usually some thought behind this. And so, so we don't say the specific models. Well, like for the vehicles, we say one compact or mid-sized truck for zoning, one-ton flatbed truck for public works, and two other one-ton trucks. And then they have an ATV that they would replace. And the advantage that a city government has over the every other type of, you know, private individual is we don't pay taxes when we buy these vehicles. And if we don't modify them, like we don't have a police fleet that has lights that go on these vehicles, so we don't have a lot of aftermarket expenses on these type of vehicles. Now, when we buy a 10-wheeler or a bobtail, there is a big loss when we try to sell those vehicles, and so we hold on to those type of vehicles much longer. But on our trucks, we rotate them fast because we have a price advantage right off, right when we buy them. And the longer we hold on to them, we lose our price advantage. So, anyway, any questions on the motor pool vehicle numbers?
I have a quick question. So you've given us this vehicle replacement schedule, and it has all kinds of colors in various rows, and I don't know what those colors mean.
Colors don't, they're just
so trying. If you were to look at that in this year, it shows you there's four colors. They are corresponding to a specific vehicle, and they would buy and sell in this fiscal year that vehicle. So,
and then going across, it says I'm going to keep that vehicle for 3 years.
Yeah, and so if you look, go across, say that first gray, from here it's gray.
Yeah.
Then if you look 3 years down the road, it gets replaced again according to this schedule. And so that's why we keep track of the vehicle, the fiscal year we purchase them, when we need to sell them, and then 3 years later, same thing again. Now, one thing we're trying to do with the vehicle replacement program is to balance the vehicles that need to be rotated so that we don't get a whole, you know, we don't want to replace six or seven vehicles in 1 year. We want to have a balanced approach so that we don't have to fund too many vehicles in 1 year and none the next, because it hurts our cash flow. So we do pay cash for these vehicles, and like Charles said, there actually is a lot of analysis that goes into why a specific vehicle should be purchased and what the resale value is. There's some examples on the bottom of that sheet of what we've paid for vehicles and what we've sold them for, and we keep track of that because what we're trying to do is limit or reduce our outlay for these vehicles. Some of these vehicles, we're getting them much cheaper than we could even leasing the vehicles. And if that's the case, then that is showing us that this program is working.
Okay.
Go ahead.
That average monthly cost is exclusive of depreciation, or?
Includes depreciation.
Well, that's just the difference between what we bought it, what we sold it, and then the months divided into the difference.
Oh, with no actual maintenance.
That's just the cash.
Okay.
The cash outflow.
Well, and there is no cash maintenance, no outlay for maintenance, because they're all on warranty.
Right.
And that's
right.
The beautiful part about the replacement program is you're not putting a lot of money into repairs on these vehicles. We're burning off the warranty and then selling them.
Yeah. Okay.
That was basically what I was going to say. I know I ask this every year, but I always think it's good to just explain to residents why financially it makes more sense to rotate these on a 3-year basis than just to run them into the ground and keep them for longer.
Charles' idea was to rotate them every 6 months. We'd make more money. But I think that's a little
no,
aggressive.
I said every one. They told me legally that we can only do it once a year. But it is a lot of paperwork for Jeff, and they can spend all their time just, like, doing paperwork and not actually doing anything outside their office, and so we try to get them outside of their office sometimes.
I want to buy into this program.
Because we don't have a purchasing department. Any other questions? Yeah, this is just what we're proposing. This isn't something we approve right now, but if we don't hear any objections, then this is what we'll recommend in June. Would you like to move on to capital projects?
Sounds good.
Okay. I can't read this, but... Okay. All right. Because the impact fees weren't finalized yet, we just start talking about expenditures tonight. So, as far as new projects, and one of the things that was brought up at the retreat was the Harvey Roundabout project, and so we put in a budget amount of $300,000, and the funding for that would be street impact fees. That is just a tentative amount. If we could do it for less, then we would do it for less. But that is just a number that David wanted me to use. So,
do we have the room there to do it in your brief analysis?
A cursory look would show that we have room. That Harvey Boulevard is one of our widest roads because it's a collector grade road. So it's as wide as any street in our city. Roundabouts take a lot of room, and it would have to be a small roundabout, and it would have to have a mountable curb on the inside, so as vehicles go through that roundabout, if they were pulling a trailer or something, that it could actually go up into the interior of the roundabout.
Similar to the one in Alpine at the entrance. That's mountable, right?
It's mountable for about 6 feet.
Yeah.
And so, but then they have that curb wall straight up.
Right.
So it'll be much smaller than the Alpine one. It'll be smaller than any roundabout we have. But in addition to the center treatment, we would also need to treat each leg of the intersection so that we are keeping traffic going in the right direction. So there would actually be a curb on each leg that would extend basically from the curve of the roundabout into, you know, up the road a short distance. So that would force people to take a right as they enter the intersection.
So that's the teardrop coming back up.
That's the teardrop coming back.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And possibly some modifications to the curb and gutter sidewalk to narrow down that section, because typically you don't want them as wide as that intersection is all the way around. So we may be modifying the curb gutter component.
I did look at that again after we met last time.
Yeah.
And I think, although the intent of the right, whatever you call
table.
It, the triangle, what do you call that?
The table that's down there?
No, the view triangle. What do you call that again?
Oh, sight triangle.
Mm-hmm. I think the intent is there, but because Harvey curves off, you actually lose some of that. So, I mean, there could be an alternate way of extending that triangle down a little bit further and lowering that one fence as well. I don't know. I mean, there may be another option, too.
Okay.
So this was the number that we wanted to plug in. And again, the council can debate any of these proposals and modify and adjust. This is the first shot at looking at the capital projects, and so we can modify these as we go. Charl will be presenting different components of the budget in pieces as we go through, so that you guys can really get a feel for what's in it. Instead of giving you the entire budget all at once, it can be overwhelming to look at all the different details. So,
hey David, can I ask you one question on that?
Yeah.
Are those numbers that you guys put together, the 300,000, is that staff numbers, or have we looked at or talked to anybody to get like kind of a
ballpark idea on what that would cost? Because, I mean, there's a lot of things that go into that.
Yeah.
And that number could change fairly drastically depending on the scope of work that we do down there.
Yeah. So this is just a staff number for now.
Okay.
So we haven't done any engineering or any design work yet.
Okay.
So that's...
So it's just purely staff's number that they plugged in.
Yep.
Okay. Cool.
That's a guesstimate.
The official doc definition of it.
It's just a guesstimate.
Are you going to address the miscellaneous projects also, or is it time to just ask questions at this point?
Oh,
about those?
No, I'll go down each project.
Okay. Thanks.
Any further questions on the roundabout? No? Okay, so the next one that we added is we set aside the care tax money for 2015 and any park development impact fees that we have for the Bay Hill Trailhead Park Phase 1. And that was $50,000.
I'm sorry, I did have a question. I thought you skipped over the Harvey Boulevard widening. Is that right?
Oh, yes. That wasn't really new, but...
Yeah, I know that's not new. Is that... how needed is that to do that in 2015 as opposed to pushing it off a few years?
Okay, it's my understanding that there's certain items that we because they're under litigation, that we have to budget for them even if we don't plan.
That's in conjunction with the building of Deerfield Park.
Right. Okay.
So... And that's one of those items. So is Deerfield, like she said, Deerfield Park projects.
Mm-hmm. And so then the Bay Hill Trailhead Park Phase 1, this is what we talked about at our retreat about doing a phasing of that park instead of trying to build it all at once. And so you've allocated some money in the budget tentatively to... where is that estimate coming from? Is that just a staff estimate?
That's based on what funding we have available in those restricted funding sources.
Okay. Do we have a sense of what that would do for us?
So the initial portion that we would want to do is the playground area up towards the Bay Hill Street itself. It wouldn't do any parking lots or anything like that. That would exceed that cost. So this would be more for a playground site and equipment.
Okay. The next project is the Canyon Road Sewer, and this would come out of the water and sewer fund balance, and it is one of the projects that was listed on the Bowen and Collins study. It's actually listed for 2014's budget. And this would need to take place before the road is milled and whatever. And this budget...
Can you explain what that is?
The Canyon Road Sewer?
I mean, what are we doing?
Well, I can tell you that this original budget that was put in Bowen Collins was based on it becoming a county road and having less restrictive requirements. And if it's still a state road at that time, then it will be much more expensive.
So this is basically just getting sewer to all of our residents that right now are on a septic system on Canyon Road.
Correct. It's a new, it's an extension of the sewer main, and it would actually come up Monson Lane, and then it would also tee and get all of the residents on Canyon Road. So right now we can service residents from Box Elder south on Canyon Road, but we cannot service residents on Canyon Road north of Box Elder. So this would pick up that low point and then take it down Monson Lane.
But you're saying if the state maintains ownership of the road, the $400,000 wouldn't cover what they would require that we do?
Yeah, their construction standards include installation of flowable fill in the entire trench of any utility that's installed. And that is hundreds of thousands of dollars of just flowable fill. Whereas if it were a county road or a city road, we would use either native if it was good backfill or imported backfill, but not flowable fill.
That flowable fill would probably be close to the $400,000 for that section, wouldn't it?
It is.
So do we have an idea if UDOT maintains ownership of that road, what would it cost us to do sewer improvements there?
$600,000 to $800,000.
Okay.
Is there an urgency on doing this item this year?
You know,
for those residents, yes.
I don't know if it's worth $400,000 to those residents either. I don't know.
You know, eventually the city, we should be planning to provide sewer services to all of our residents, and their septic tanks are failing. And so, by state law, when a septic tank fails, they need to hook onto a sewer line. And if there's one within 400 feet, which in some of those cases there is not, and then that puts the onus back on the city to provide that sewer. So it is something that has been on our capital improvement plan for several years.
So in the past, when one has failed, we haven't provided it in the past. Why is the urgency right now to do that?
I think a lot of it has to do with just how many are going to fail. Mm-hmm. They will start failing more rapidly and more of them. So they've been sporadic. Septic systems only last a specific amount of time. Mm-hmm. And so there have been a couple fail, and they've had to try to rebuild those. But even the rebuilds aren't going to last. So they will fail again.
And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but part of the reason why we were discussing it for this year was because of the improvements that UDOT was going to do. And once they do those improvements, the cost for us to then go tear up the road and put a sewer system in goes up dramatically.
Yeah, and they won't even let us.
They won't even let us.
They won't give us a cut permit.
But it's a lot easier to do it when they're doing their construction and they've already got the road torn up than to try to do it either before or after. We need to time it so that it can be done at the same time, right?
Right before. We need to do our project right before they do any work on their surface.
Right.
Jeff, did you have a...
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that at the end of last year, we did initiate our sewer management plan, sanitary management plan. Part of that plan is required that jurisdictions will fund and provide the sewers to the locations where people are on these septic and allow them to get off. That is incorporated in that new plan that we have.
Mm-hmm. And I know some people, it seems like people have preferred having septic. Some people may even prefer having septic. I don't know. It seems like I've known people that have said, oh, it's great. But anyway, the question I have too is, how many of our residents, I might have missed that, we might have mentioned it, but how many of our residents are going to be serviced by this?
I can't recall the exact number. And along that roadway, there's both Cedar Hills residents and Pleasant Grove residents, both along that section.
I would like to know how many of our residents and possibly even know if that's a priority to them, because $400,000 is a lot of money, and I think there's a lot of priorities for the city. I just wonder if that's the top one. So I just question if that's one of the top priorities, because there's a lot of things that we need to do as a city, and so I'm just asking the question, puts this as a priority enough to...
Yeah, and as you're considering the priorities, consider mm-hmm. the funding source. This is a restricted fund just for sewer, so we can't say, hey, we would like a park more than this sewer line. They are sewer funds. They have to be spent on sewer projects that are identified, and this is one of the projects that's identified because it's a restricted fund.
So we can't use it for anything but sewer, and this is the top sewer.
David,
not all of it, but some of it.
David, that's not quite true.
Well, we are using impact funds.
No. We're using unrestricted fund balance in water and sewer.
But water and sewer funds.
So, water and sewer funds are not restricted. They can be spent on anything.
Thank you for clarifying that. That's helpful.
I apologize if I'm wrong.
Politically, it's really stupid to spend it on recreation.
I was going
to
say, charging residents exactly. for water and sewer and then spending it on recreation would be a very bad idea.
We would get burned at the stake.
So, Greg, it's a very bad idea.
He thinks, which is correct, that we should only spend water and sewer on water and sewer, which is proper.
There may not be a formal ordinance stating that they have to be used on sewer, but there's kind of that unwritten, if they're earmarked for sewer and water, they dang well better be spent for that, unless there is just some unearthly reason why we can't spend it on that.
So these are funds that were earned from residents for their sewer and water, is what you're saying, too. Is that right?
From their utility bills.
Yeah.
Okay.
So do we have... I guess my question is, do we have any kind of requirement that we've got to be able to provide sewer to these residents by a certain time in lieu of a septic system? And do we have any liability to the city if their septic system fails and we haven't provided sewer access?
Those are good questions. It is identified in our plan for us to provide sewer. I don't know that there's a specific time frame that we've identified to get it done.
I would like to know how many of our residents are going to be served with that before I'm really in favor of this. So if someone could look into that for me and then somehow get a feel for how urgent that community, that group over there feels that it is to get this done. I just haven't heard anyone saying that's a priority, so I would like to hear that's a priority if we're going to spend $400,000 on it. So.
I don't think it becomes a priority until they have problems.
Right.
We've had two in the past few months. One that was just interested in connecting, they haven't had problems yet. Mm-hmm. And another one that they have had problems and they have been able to.
And then do we force them to connect to it if we do get service out there and their septic system does fail? Do we require them to connect up even if they don't want to? And does it cost them money to connect up?
When their system fails, their septic system fails, then they are required by law to connect to the sewer.
And how much does that cost them on average to connect up?
It depends on how far away they are. Like 400 feet, it would be quite expensive.
Because my feeling goes back to when I was a resident and I liked how things were set up when I moved in, that I could use I didn't have much grass and I just used my regular water source rather than the pressurized irrigation, and then the city increased the price and I felt like I was pushed into purchasing the pressurized irrigation, and it became a sore spot for me and my neighbors that we were forced into the $1,000 or $2,000 fee. So I just don't want it to be a burden too. So anyway.
Is it a requirement by the city to hook up if the septic system fails, or requirement by the state?
State. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's it probably ought to be noted, we ought to let the citizens know that if this was to take place prior to the resurfacing of the highway, then they would have been notified and told that it would be advantageous cost-wise to them to put their lateral there before they have to go on the highway. Otherwise, they're going to have to set the highway and redo all of that.
Which the resident would have to pay for.
So, Jeff, also, does the city or the resident that then hooks up, do they pay the new, whatever the sewer impact fee is as well, when they go in and say, hey, my septic system failed, okay, now you have to pay the sewer impact fee? Are they obligated to pay that at that time as well, in addition to providing the lateral? Is there a connection? I'm just looking.
Yeah, they would have to pay the impact fee. Yeah.
Not an impact fee, though.
It's an impact fee.
Oh, is it an impact
fee? Yeah.
Connect?
So impact fees and hookup fees are essentially the same thing, especially.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
You know.
Okay. So at this point, to David or Jeff or both, has this sewer line been designed to the point where we've got stations and elevation? Is it engineered?
Yeah,
I mean, the plan
engineered.
Is done. Does that plan include laterals for all those lots, or are you talking just main lines at this point? Because it is advantageous to put at least the Y and a stub lateral in,
yeah,
so that you don't have to cut the line every single time. I mean, I've done this a lot,
yeah,
so I know.
it's a lateral to the property line, but not from property line into the home.
Okay.
So in addition to Rob's request to find out how many residents this affects, I think it would also be important for us to let our residents know, if we decided to do it at a later point, what would the increase in cost be to cut up on a road that UDOT may not let us cut open, or if they even will, and what the increase in cost would be for the residents to, you're saying, install a lateral would be more expensive after construction is done on Canyon Road than before. Is that correct, Jeff?
Yes. I think they just indicated that we would have the laterals in, so I just
okay. Because I think it would be
stub that to the property. It wouldn't be onto their property, but stub to the property line. So the residents are still required to install the line from their property line to wherever their septic or to the house.
But that wouldn't be affected by Canyon Road improvements, I think is what you're saying.
No, it wouldn't.
Okay.
It's just the Y and the stub to the property.
So I think it would be good for us to get a perspective of, we know what it would cost to do it now, but like Rob said, to figure out how many people this impacts, but also what's the cost if we don't do it now? If we do it 5 years from now or 10 years from now, how much is it going to increase?
Well, and will UDOT let us cut that road?
And can we even do it?
Yeah.
And I think each individual resident that is affected should at least get a specific letter. I mean, it's probably not that many people. I mean, they should get a specific letter from the city stating that, you know, they're not here right now. But I guarantee if they come in and all of a sudden each person's hit with anywhere from $1,000 to $3,000 of sewer issues, they'll be here.
Oh, yeah. I would be.
Yeah. So I think it's advantageous for us to get something to all those residents that are affected.
It may be good to also add this to the newsletter, too, for our next one, and just let residents know that it's something we're starting to discuss, and we hope to look at it in future council meetings.
Yeah, absolutely.
If this affects PG as well, have we talked to PG about sharing the cost on this?
Yeah, we have approached that in general with them, and we haven't had any kind of, you know, serious discussion as far as what the cost would be for each one, but we've brought that up to them. One of the general philosophy of past councils has been if the city provides the service, then those homes along the road would actually boundary adjust to get our service, and that would help clean up the border.
Mm-hmm.
And that may or may not be where this council wants to go. But we would have to discuss that and see. And if our council wants to cost share with Pleasant Grove and leave all the homes in the cities that they're in, then that's something that you could explore.
Okay.
And technically, doesn't Pleasant Grove have the same responsibility to provide service to these people as we do?
Yes.
To their residents.
Okay. And they're a lot further away from a sewer main. So,
so they may be motivated to work with us then.
Could be.
Okay. Any other comments, questions?
Yeah.
Charlie, you have anything else you want to say?
No, not for this item.
Not particularly. Is
it? No, not for this item.
Oh. Going to the next item.
Let's move on.
So, okay, the next item, I have $300,000 for maintenance equipment facility and site. And what this doesn't include that I had on the retreat, I had another $50,000, which would be for a site plan that would happen in this current budget year. So, and then the funding sources would be $100,000 from the general fund, $100,000 from capital projects fund, and $100,000 from water and sewer. And that is for like a really, really, really basic shed. And that's if we get approval from Highland. And I went out to West Valley and their shed was like over $700,000. And it's just, you know.
What's their shed used for?
Golf.
The golf course, okay.
And, you know, you think of used rough mowers like $48,000 and, I don't know. The reason for this shed is it's a safety concern because originally when the shed was supposed to be built in the first place, Highland, I guess, didn't give their approval. So we're hoping that this is something that we can work out with them at this time. If not, then we would have to do a plan B, like around the driving range or something, and put a net so it doesn't hit. I mean, it's really not ideal. I think when the course plans were drawn out, this is where the maintenance shed was planned to go, and they were caught off guard when Highland didn't work with them in the first time around. Mm-hmm. So that's why that's there, and it's my understanding that we're just trying to work with Highland right now and see what our options are.
I would like to suggest that we look at a couple different options, that we maybe look at an option of adjusting what we've got there or making it safer, maybe getting a bid to just make some changes to the shed that we have to increase the safety of it. So I'd like to at least get a bid from a builder or someone to look at upgrading what we have to make it better or safer, too. Just to see what our options are.
Right.
Well, can I make a comment? Just as a general contractor, I mean, I've gone through the building and looked at it. Mm-hmm. I am very concerned that it probably can't be brought up to code.
Okay.
I mean, there are some very serious issues that when you start talking about remodeling and repair versus building new, sometimes there's an offsetting cost where it's a net zero. Whether you tear it down and start over, or you spend so much labor and so much material and so much time trying to retrofit something that's old and get it up to where it's at, that it doesn't make any sense to keep repairing something that's old when you can get the same building at a new cost that's the same.
And my point is...
something we're going to have to look at.
One thing I would like to just see, you know, a couple different options.
One of the things I forgot to mention is that this is not a bid just for the building. The building would be under $200,000. This is a bid mostly, I mean, more than, at least probably half the cost is for stormwater issues. So
that actually gets
site improvements.
That actually gets to my question. If it is more like a half instead of a third, would it make sense to charge half of it to the sewer and water fund instead of a third like you've allocated right now?
Yeah, I mean, we'd have to look at where the bids came out and then allocate it what was fair.
I know there's a lot of thoughts on this, pros and cons. I would suggest the first thing we should do is actually get some bids and get a feel for what our options are. Would that be helpful for the council if we did that?
I think in order to do that, though, we need to have some idea of what we're going to send out. Well, not even send out to bid, because that's the wrong word. But even to go out and talk to a contractor, we need to have some idea of what we're going to do.
Yep.
So I think we probably need to develop even a concept we're going to look at.
So do you want to have David and his staff come up with a proposal in terms of what the maintenance shed should look like and then discuss it? Is that what you want?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think we need to keep everybody on the same page and make sure that we're actually looking apples to apples, because we could go out and talk to one contractor and he's looking at the Taj Mahal, and we go talk to another contractor and he's looking at a Quonset hut, and there's a huge range in between. So I think we really need to have our staff identify what our needs are, what our square footages are, what type of building is best for us, and look at probably all the stages and the different concepts, everything that we need as a city right now,
yes,
and then go from there.
Let's
I agree.
Let's do that. I don't think I want to have a drawn-out discussion on something before we have narrowed our focus a little bit. And
right.
So if it's okay with council, David, can you come back with a proposal in terms of what our needs are? And at that point, let's have a full discussion in terms of what we want. And I know that some people want to do more, some people want to do less, but it seems premature to talk about that stuff until we know what our needs are.
Yeah.
No, so agreed.
Let's find out what they are first.
With the site plan, David, is that something that's easy to get bid out? Because I know we already got bids out on the building itself. I mean, we already did that just to kind of get a range of how much the building was. For the other parts of it, how much money do we need to spend just to get a bid?
What we're going to have to really identify on the site is how we're going to take care of stormwater issues, containment of the fuel systems, things like that. I think we can get a rough idea. It won't be a bid. It won't be a contractor saying, I will do this for you guys at this cost.
Right.
It will be more a general thing like, hey, asphalt is $2.50 a square foot, and you guys have this many square feet, roughly. That's what it would be more like. It wouldn't be a bid per se.
Yeah,
but we could go out and say, okay, we're probably going to need a concrete box that's got a 12-inch lip on it, that's got 250 square feet, that's 4 inches thick, sealed. I mean, we can develop kind of the specs that we know and then go out to somebody and say, okay, what do you charge for a foundation wall per linear foot? What do you charge for slabs per foot? And start to develop an idea of what we need.
Jeff, do you think that is going to be easy to get a bid on? Because I know we got We went to 37 contractors to get bids for plumbing on the Mesquite Park, and we only got three people that responded.
But I don't think we need bids at this point. I don't think
I know, but
for a
I'm
bid.
Just saying.
And probably we won't be able to get down to, oh, we have this many linear feet of foundation wall. I mean, it's going to be very high level. It's not going to be, we know exactly the design of what the containment system looks like. We won't even have that.
Yeah.
It's going to be probably more general than
that. I just think it's going to be really rough.
So let's do this in order to accommodate what I think everyone's needs are, is that you're going to talk with your staff and figure out what they think that their needs are. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to come back to us and tell us what you think that their needs are in relation to a maintenance shed. And at that point, the council is going to discuss what they want to spend on that maintenance shed and what they want it to look like. Does that sound agreeable to everybody? Okay. I don't see that we needed to prolong the discussion too much tonight because I think we're getting the cart before the horse here. So, Cheryl, was there anything else that you wanted to address?
No, that's it.
I have one quick question. What was in the Community Recreation Center Phase 2 that we're putting off? Out of curiosity, what was in that $350,000 that now we're budgeting down to zero?
No, it's just done. It's done. So that's why it comes out of the budget.
Oh, I got it. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Lowe. Very good. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. Someone want to make a motion to adjourn?
I will motion to adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
We are done. Thank you.
What is the Utah Valley Road Special Service District?